fascism. It is here, and that is what we are experiencing.
Well, thank you very much for calling, Gretchen. We're now all the way out of time. I want to thank all of you for calling. This is Linda Olson-Osterlund for Positively Revolting. We should have Ani or Lynn back with the next show. Thank you all for calling in and becoming part of the conversation.
Second, every day, when every action, every thought will tell the world how you cast your vote.
Hi, this is John Schuck, host of Progressive Spirit. What is listening?
Listening, for me, is an act of love. That's surrounding people with a total kind of acceptance, and that helps them grow and come alive and be healthier and relax and do what they can do.
Jim Peterson is my guest, the author of Why Don't We Listen Better? Communicating and Connecting in Relationships. Listen to weekly podcasts on kboo.fm/progressive spirit.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Aftermath, part of the Brown Paper series produced by Triangle Productions. The play runs November 28th at 7 p.m. at the Sanctuary at Sandy Plaza in Portland. In Mary Burrell's 1919 one-act, John Thornton, a young black soldier who has served his country in World War I, comes home to rural South Carolina. His homecoming is disrupted when he learns that someone close to him has been lynched by a white mob. Again, that's Aftermath, produced by Triangle Productions, November 28th at 7 p.m. at The Sanctuary at Sandy Plaza, 1785 Northeast Sandy Boulevard in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Good morning. You're listening to KBOO Portland. And here's what we have coming up for you this morning on KBOO. Veterans Voice is first up. Northwest Veterans for Peace deal with the costs and effects of war. At 10 o'clock, Chris Andre hosts Air Cascadia, headlines, news, and commentary. At 10:15, we got Flashpoints with host Dennis Bernstein. He continues a week of broadcasting from Standing Rock and an extended interview with Tom Goldtooth. At 11 o'clock, Radio Zine presents longtime consumer advocate, author, and former Green Party candidate for president, Ralph Nader, speaking in Portland at Powell's City of Books. And we once again thank you, KBOO members, for supporting KBOO. And if you're not a current member, you can become one by going to kboo.fm and clicking where it says donate. Thanks for doing that. And now we get to Veterans Voice.
How many roads must a man walk down before you call him a man? How many seas must the white dove sail before she sleeps in the sand? isn't how many times must the cannonballs fly before they're forever banned. The answer, my friend, is blowing in the wind. The answer is blowing in the wind. Yes, and how many years can a mountain exist before it is washed to the sea? Yes, and how many years can some people exist before they're allowed to be free? Yes, and how many times can a man turn his head and pretend that he just doesn't see? The answer, my friend, is blowing in the wind. The answer is blowing in the wind. Yes, and how many times must a man look up before he can see the sky? Yes, and how many ears must one man have before he can hear people cry? Yes, and how many deaths will it take till he knows that too many people have died? The answer, my friend, is blowing in the wind. The answer is blowing in the wind.
Welcome to Veteran Voice Radio Show on KBOO 90.7 FM here in Portland and the Oregon Coast, 91.9 FM Hood River and the Columbia River Gorge, and 104.3 in Corvallis and the Willamette Valley. And you can also hear our great station at kboo.fm on the World Wide Web. And you can also hear some of our earlier shows by going to kboo.fm/veteransvoice. And I am Marvin, and I'm here with Angie.
Good morning.
And we have a Facebook page that Angie's going to tell you about, because I don't know how to do it on that. So Angie takes care of it.
We are on Facebook, Veterans Voice Radio Show on KBOO 90.7 FM. That is the name of the radio show. www.facebook.com/veteransvoice.kboo.
Yeah, so we do that, and she puts a lot of wonderful things on there. Like I said, I don't know how to do it. So today, we're going to go ahead and have some call-ins, and we're going to talk about some veterans issues here. Angie's got some stuff on the VA hospital system, and I've got a little bit on that too. And I've got some stuff on Agent Orange that we'll talk about, that's killing off my generation of Vietnam War veterans. And I want to talk a little bit about that. But first, I wanted to talk a little about something about this last fiasco that they called an election. And I'm not very happy about it. I know Angie's not happy about it. And a few folks that have been listening to this show for the last 26 years know that I do not have a problem with guys, because back then it was guys. We were getting drafted and stuff. With guys avoiding the draft, I have no problem with that. And I have no problem with the guys that went to Canada. And I really respect the guys that went to prison for refusing to go to Vietnam. And I didn't know I could say no at the time, because I was really young. I was 18. and I didn't know I could say no. And so I really have no problem with my brothers that didn't go, but I do have a problem with guys my age that didn't go but supported the war, and now these guys are in charge. And they're going to be able to send guys and now women to war and to their death. And when they had the chance, they didn't go. And I have no respect for that. And Don and mine, I just hate saying the word. I just can't stand that word. It just hangs on my tongue. I can't. He's so horrible that he had his chance to go to fight right along with me and my brothers. And a lot of my buddies didn't come home from that war, but he had his chance to go, and he took some phony deferment so he wouldn't have to go. While we were over there on the battlefields, he was back enjoying his rich little boy life and not having to worry about being shot. And now he's going to be able to send other people to war? That he's going to have that drone program, that he's going to be able to send those drones around the world to kill people? You know, I have a real problem with that. I have a, you know, I had the same problem with Dick Cheney. I had the same problem with George W. Bush. All these folks that had their chance to go but didn't, and they can now, then they get the chance to kill people. And to me, that's just disgusting. I think it is just so disgusting.
I have an idea. Maybe we should draft the children from the Senate and Congress.
Yeah. I can't. Tammy's at the board again today. I'm sorry, Tammy. I didn't mention you. I'm so sorry. She's been with us, man, almost 11 years or 12 years now. Really, more than that. She's been with us a long, long time. But I just had to say that I couldn't stand it anymore. I had to say it. And I'm just so angry. But the Veterans Hospital, and she's going to talk about it, but I got this thing. Derek sent it to me. It's Oregon Veterans Home in the Dalles receives $114,000 grant to recruit and retain nursing staff, which is really, really good. They just got this loan, and they're going to be able to get hire some nurses, and it's going to be a long-term thing, it looks like. And not only is it for hiring nurses, but also certified nursing assistants, CNAs. They're going to be able to do that. They're going to be able to have those folks. And also for the folks that went through nursing school, that they're going to get a bonus for signing up, and along with the CNAs, the nurses will get $5,000 bonus, and the certified nurses' aides will get $1,000 bonus for signing up to work at the old soldiers' home, basically what it is. Plus, they will also get a loan forgiveness on their tuition that they paid for. So anything that the nurses took dealing with nursing, they'll be able to write that off of their loans. So if anybody out there is a nurse or a CNA and they're interested, they can call the local VA. I'm sorry, I don't have the number. It's pretty easy to get. But
I think I have it memorized.
Okay, it's, here we go.
503-220-8262.
There you go. And you can ask them about the program and go work with some really interesting old people who are in wars. And that's a really good thing that if you're a nurse, that's a good way. You're going to get a lot of experience with different kinds of problems that veterans have. And one of them is Agent Orange. And I got this Well, it's kind of, it was in ProPublica, and it was also in another newspaper in Virginia, I believe. And it says, new study could pressure VA to expand Agent Orange benefits. And, you know, we've talked about Agent Orange a lot, and Agent Orange was a chemical that its byproduct is dioxin, which is just dangerous. And what they did in Vietnam, they sprayed it. And they would spray it over the jungles and to what they're saying, that they spread it so they could get rid of the foliage so that the supposed enemy wouldn't have the place to hide. But that also took away our place to hide too, you know? So it was kind of horrible. But they also, when they spray it, it's like dropping a bomb, you know. You just, that bomb doesn't always go right where they wanted it to go. And the same with this, they would spray Agent Orange out of these big, huge airplanes. There would be like three of them just side by side going, and this big sprays coming out of them. And sometimes they would spray it using helicopters, and sometimes around fire bases and stuff, they would have these handheld pumps that the guys would you know, spray around the perimeters of fire support bases and stuff. And so, but it also got on the rice crops that the Vietnamese were growing for their food, and it got in the water supply. And there's a real problem in Vietnam, even to this day, with deformities in children.
And we can relate that to depleted uranium in Iraq and Afghanistan now.
Exactly.
Because depleted uranium is a type of enriched uranium that when it explodes, and we've put this depleted uranium into the warheads of ammunition that we fire, and the purpose of it is to project basically very hardened steel and be able to penetrate very deeply. And what it does is when it explodes, the dust particles go all over the place.
Right.
Well, those dust particles, when they settle, they settle onto all kinds of objects of the destroyed building. When people leave, people flee, and then they come back and try to rebuild with some of the same materials. So they're going through the rubble and they're trying to rebuild with some of the same things, and they're looking for their loved ones, etc. And they get these dust particles in their body and on their body. It has gone into the groundwater there.
Yeah.
And depleted uranium doesn't go away.
No.
It lasts.
It has a half-life of just
of the same amount of time that the Earth has existed.
Yeah,
3.5 billion years.
Right.
And it causes extreme deformities, and so this is the second generation of Agent Orange, basically.
Right, definitely. And also something that I've talked to a lot of Gulf vets. You know, that war never ended. It started in, what, 94, and it's continued to this day. It's a never-ending war. And these guys that were in tanks, because the tips of those big rounds that they fire out of these tanks, that's it. That's depleted uranium, and it just hardens, like Angie said, it hardens that end of that bullet that can go through just thick steel and concrete and whatever.
And also red phosphorus,
white phosphorus,
which has been being used in other countries right now, too.
Right. And that's and so on these tanks, when they would load these rounds in these tanks, they would fire it out of these tanks, and there'd be blowback that would come out back into when they fired it. As a bullet took off, the pressure would blow back the depleted uranium dust back into the tanks. And the folks, like Angie was saying, what happens is when this stuff's around, it gets kicked around and moved, and the wind blows and all over, it goes into the lungs. And when it goes into the lungs, it's in there. And it's going to cause a lot of problems.
Well, the trouble is that it gets passed on to the next generation and generations to follow. So it's not like just because you're not standing there in front of the bomb that you're not affected by that. It gets into your body and it continues to wreak havoc. And so now, actually, in Iraq, I believe it was in 2009 or one of those years, they had the highest rate of leukemia in the world because of depleted uranium.
Right. And that's like Agent Orange. Agent Orange is passed down from fathers to their children. But with Agent Orange, it can skip a generation that they found. It can skip a generation. So I have chloracne on my face from Agent Orange. It's chloracne. And it goes, my son didn't get anything, but his kids may get something. So it skips that generation, you know. It's like depleted uranium. It's the gift that keeps on giving. And the VA it was such a hard fight to get them to even admit that Agent Orange was a problem, just like depleted uranium. And we had to fight and fight and fight for that. And we did get some things that they accepted as service-connected disability from Agent Orange. And one of them is chloracne, which I have. But now they had this new testing, and it's showing that Agent Orange now causes heart problems, and it also causes hypertension, which is high blood pressure. That high blood pressure in Vietnam veterans is way higher than the same age group of people who didn't go to Vietnam. It is just so much higher in us guys than like I said, the folks that didn't go. And the study group came up with it, and they did all this stuff, and they got it, and they went to take it to the VA, and the VA said, "Whoa, wait a minute, hold on, you know," because bottom line, it would cost them money. It would cost them a lot of money to have to pay out benefits to veterans, and more veterans with this disease would have hypertension, they would have to take care of that in the VA system, and that would put more pressure on the VA. And so they said, "Wait a minute, you know, we don't want to do that. Change your report." And so they accepted the VA accepted one, which was a heart defect, and they accepted that. But now there's this big fight going on about them going to have to sooner or later. They're going to have to accept hypertension or high blood pressure in Vietnam veterans. So, you know, the fight goes on. They want to send us to war, but when they destroy our bodies, they don't want to take care of us. So,
what other exciting announcements do we have for today? Well, I have one, and this is actually one I would participate in if I was able. Some people out there might be interested, some veterans. There's actually a really awesome writing workshop that's going to be happening, and this is really great. And I will say the contact information for this a couple of times because it seems very awesome. The name is Sean Davis, who you want to call, and his phone number is 503-679-3885. And this is what it is. I will go ahead and read what it says here. America has been at war for more than a decade. Those who serve, their families and civilians at home, all experience wartime differently. And the gaps in understanding each other's perspectives can be huge. Beginning this December, Portland area veterans, family members of veterans, and civilians are invited to join a small group, 25 people or fewer, for a free 6-month reading, writing, and discussion group.
Wow.
War Stories is an opportunity, and that is the name of this writing workshop, War Stories, is an opportunity to come together to explore the experience of military service, wartime, and the challenges and opportunities of transitioning from active duty to civilian life through talking and reflection. Participants will read selections of poems, essays, and memoir from veterans and writers from the Civil War through the most recent wars in Iraq and Afghanistan that cover themes such as patriotism, loyalty, ethics, homecoming, and family.
Well,
there will also be prompts for participants to write about and reflect on their own experiences and impressions of war.
Wow, that's
great. The program
great.
Will take place the first Tuesday of each month, December 6, 2016, through May 2, 2017 at American Legion Post 134, T104 Northeast Alberta Street. I've been there before. It's a nice place. From 6:30 to 8:30 p.m. So, again, that seems pretty awesome, doesn't it?
I think it's pretty great.
Sean Davis. I'll just give his phone number one more time.
Sean, yeah, Sean.
503-679-3885.
Great. Because that's a really good therapy, because when I went through my counseling for PTSD, I started out with one-on-one counseling for about 5 years. I did it one-on-one counseling for 5 years on my post-traumatic stress disorder. And then I got into a group, and I did that for maybe another 5 years. But they had my doc said that she wanted me to go into a program, a special program that dealt with writing like that.
Are you talking about cognitive processing therapy?
Because it was like that.
I did that, and it was really good. It was really helpful. It doesn't take away PTSD, but what it does do is it gives you an opportunity to write through some of your issues with under a licensed clinical practitioner.
Yeah, and that's exactly what it was. And so I went. Did you do it in Vancouver? Or did you do it here?
I did that in Portland.
In Portland. I did it in Vancouver. And so I went to the first meeting, and we sat and we talked, and she said, I want you to write just one thing, one experience that bothers you the most. And I said, okay. So I went home, and I talked to Laurel, and I said, here's what I'm going to do. This is what I'm going to talk about. And she says, great. So I went on my computer, and I did it, the whole story, right? So I'm writing it, and I'm mad. I tear it up, and I get mad and go outside. And finally, I got it done, and I had it all together. And that week, I had to go back and see my doc. So I went, and she said, well, how'd it go? And I said, well, it was pretty hard. You know, I had a lot of trouble with it and hollered a lot and went outside a lot. And she says, let me see it. So I handed her these typed pages from my computer, right? Tore it up.
Oh, wow.
She tore it up. She says, that's not going to help you. You have to write it. You have to sit down, and you have to write it with a pencil or a pen. You know, you can, on a computer, it's not going to do you that good. You have to write it on a piece of paper with a pencil or a pen.
It makes it personal that way.
Makes it personal. And so I said, wow, really? And so we talked about it, and she didn't ask me what the specific thing was. And so she says, next week, come back, have it written. And so I went back home, and I told Laurel, I said, well, she tore it up. And she says, tore it up, why'd she tear it up? And because I had to write it with a pencil. And she said that she told me to tell Laurel, Laurel can't help me, because Laurel was a PhD in English, so I would always show her my stuff, and she would edit it for me. And so Doc said, no, Laurel can't help you. She can't do anything. You just write it the way you want to do it. And so I went through the same experience, the same feelings and stuff. And so I wrote it, and next week I went back to Doc, and she says, let me see it. So I gave it to her, and she looked through it, and she says, read it to me. Did you do that too? Did you have to read it after you wrote it?
I only had to read it to my therapist in private.
Yeah, me too.
They didn't want us to trigger each other group.
Right, because this was just me and her. And so she says, read it. And so I started reading it. And I broke down and cried. And she says, well, I said, oh, man, I'm so sorry. She says, no, that's good.
Well, it's really a good thing. It's not a cure-all for PTSD,
no.
But it does definitely put things into perspective, because in cognitive processing therapy, you actually have to break down some of your psychological barriers that you put around certain things. Because with PTSD, and specifically with veterans, they associate certain things with other certain things. And then before you know it, your world gets smaller and smaller and smaller. And then instead of going around the world, you just stay in your state. And then you're just in your county. And then you're just in your room by yourself all of a sudden for years. So that's really about breaking down a lot of fear and things that you tell yourself in your head. And then once you're able to understand where some of that comes from, you can start challenging it. So
it worked really well. I think it worked really well. And I asked my doc, I said, you know, I'm gonna call my buddy who was there with me. And she said, well, good idea. So I called him up. He lives back east. And I called him up and I said, do you remember this day when this happened? And he says, oh yeah, I remember it well. And I told him what I was going through, and I said, let me read it to you. And he says, okay. So I read him it, and he says, you know, I saw it different. You know, he said, that happened. What happened happened because we all saw it happen. He said, but I saw it different, you know, a little different. And he told me how he saw it. And basically it was the same thing, but it was like at a different, you know, different angle, because he was one little spot and I was another little spot. But it was so interesting to talk about that just kind of opened it up. I said, wow, I never thought about that. And it really helped. So I think it's a good deal.
I also wanted to mention, do you have Netflix, Marvin?
No.
Okay, well, I'm sure some people...
I don't know how to do that.
Okay, well... if there's anybody out there that has Netflix, which I'm sure that there's probably many people that do, there's actually a really good TV series that just came out recently, and it's called Truth and Power.
Wow.
And it covers different things, Black Lives Matter, private prisons. It covers activists or terrorists. Because some activists are labeled terrorists,
right.
And it covers things like that, drones. And again, it's called Truth and Power. It just came out this last year. They have about 10 episodes. It's on Netflix.
Wow.
And I'm sure that you could find it some other way.
Yeah.
Also, government spying, those kinds of things are covered on this new TV series. And I haven't had a chance to watch it because I hardly ever sit down. But this is this is something that I might actually be able to sit down and watch.
That sounds great. I like I was told Angie, my mother-in-law, Laurel's mother died, and Jeff was up, and he wanted to go see a movie. So we went and saw Hacksaw Ridge. And I don't like war movies, and this is about World War II in the Pacific, and I do not like war movies. I have a real problem with them. But this was a war movie about a CO, a conscious objector, in World War II that refused to carry a gun. And it's violent, but he was a medic, and he refused to take a gun and carry a gun. And everybody in his, he got beat up in training and all of this stuff. It's just so interesting. His father had been a World War I veteran, and this guy was a conscientious objector, and he went through medic school, through medics, and they were still kind of not trusting him as they got into their battles. But this guy, his last name was Doss. I can't remember his first name. His name was Doss. He just would not carry a gun, and they get in these huge battles. They had to climb this huge cliff and got up on this cliff. It was just a huge battle. And he was fixing guys, going back and forth, fixing guys. And his company retreated and went back down the cliff, and he didn't see him. And he was up there by himself, and it was night. And here's what this guy did. This conscientious objector crawled all over there helping guys. He would drag him back to the cliff, put a rope around him, and lower him down like 80 or 90 feet. And he'd pull the rope back up, and he would take off, and he'd say, one more, let me find one more. And he did it, and that night he brought 80 guys down that cliff. 80 men. Gosh. This guy was a conscientious objector against war, and he brought 79 or 80 men. He saved their lives. Hmm. And he won a Medal of Honor. The Medal of Honor is the highest medal in the military anybody can win. And he was a conscientious objector, and he won a medal. And he saved the company commander, who had caused him nothing but trouble. He saved the life of a sergeant that caused him so much trouble. And he saved the life of another guy that had just beat him up. He had beat him up in training. And here was a conscientious objector, and he won a Medal of Honor. So it was kind of interesting.
Wow.
You know,
I
have a friend, Charlie Litke. Charlie Litke in World War II, in the Vietnam War, was a Catholic priest, and he won a Medal of Honor. He went out on a patrol. I think it was the 9th Infantry down in the Delta. He went out on a patrol for some reason. They got attacked, and he did the same thing. You know, he crawled out there and put guys on his stomach and crawled back and got all these guys. I got shot 2 or 3 times. Charlie Litke. And Charlie gave his Medal of Honor out, gave it back because of what the United States was doing down in Central America. Mm-hmm. He sent it back. He gave it back. He didn't want it.
Mm-hmm.
And he got out of the priesthood. He got out. And his name is Charlie Litke, and he's a wonderful, wonderful man. He's just a good guy, and he won a Medal of Honor for, you know, he didn't believe in war, but he went and he said he wanted to help people. Hmm. So it's really interesting. If you want to go see that movie, it's really violent, so if you don't want to see that stuff, you know. But the story itself, the very end of it, when they show real newsreels of him, it's just amazing. The guy's a tall, skinny little guy, man. And he did a wonderful thing, and he did not carry a gun. Huh. Didn't do it. He's amazing. It's a good movie. And before we get any more, before Angie talks about privatizing the VA, huh. Our boy, I can't say his name, I'm sorry. There's something that people don't... Nick Turse wrote a book about it, and Nick's a good guy, and he wrote this book about it, and it's about American bases in Africa, which they're not talking about. The United States has bases all in Africa, and the it's AFRICOM. It, you know, Army always has this, you know, cut-down names. It's African Command, so it's AFRICOM. And they don't talk about it much. You can barely find stuff on it. Nick wrote a great book. If you want to look up Nick Turse and look for his book on it, but let me tell you these where they have them: Burkina Faso, Cameroon, Central African Republic, Chad, Ethiopia, Gabon, Ghana, Kenya, Liberia, Mali, Niger, Senegal, Somalia, South Sudan, Uganda, and a couple other places I can't pronounce. But they have these military bases there. And I read his book, and Nick was talking about how, you know, they wouldn't talk to him, and he'd finally say, what about this? What about this? They'd deny it. And so they have all these bases in Africa. So no matter who wins whatever election or whatever, the military's still out there. They're still out there, and they're in different parts of the world, and we don't know what they're doing. We do not know what they're doing. And thing about Africa is it's got lots of natural resources that have not been touched yet, or barely touched. And so the U.S. is sending its military in and starting to make colonies again. So I just, if you really want to read up on something, read up on American military bases in Africa. It's really depressing, and if you read up on that.
If anybody wants any really depressing stuff to read about, to add to their already depressing stuff to read about.
Go ahead, Angie.
Well, I was thinking about what can we talk about as it relates to this new president-elect. Mm-hmm. And one of the things is that he will definitely he's obviously right-wing. So here is my idea, as well as other people's idea, trying to get, before President Obama actually leaves office, trying to get Edward Snowden and Chelsea Manning to get them pardoned.
Oh boy, yeah.
That would really be something that would be an excellent thing to have happen.
You know, Angie, I heard that Chelsea tried to commit suicide in prison.
Well, she did, and then she was put into solitary confinement after that. So,
oh boy.
So here's the number to the White House. 202-456-1111. And if you don't know who Chelsea Manning is, then, or if you don't know what exactly she did, then I can give you a quick rundown.
Yeah, please do.
Chelsea Manning is formerly Bradley Manning, who is a trans woman, was a private in the U.S. Army, and worked in intelligence. And she ended up leaking some documents to WikiLeaks, and one of the things that was really revealing and why people were really upset about this was the video of the shooting of over a dozen innocent civilians. Two of them were Reuters employees, Reuters journalists, both of them killed, as well as when people came to try to help them, they shot again. And this is a common tactic that even police use. And if you remember when we interviewed Scott Olson, when they actually bomb something, they wait for people to come and try to help them, and then they bomb again or fire again to actually try to hurt even more people and the people who are coming to their aid. Well, one of them was a soldier who was trying to help children that were in the way of this, and he actually ended up calling Chelsea Manning a hero for leaking this video. And as well as child abuse rings by government contractors in Afghanistan. Children were being sex trafficked. Guantanamo Bay torture. These types of things were leaked. And now Chelsea Manning is serving a 35-year prison sentence. 35 years. So can President Obama pardon her? Yes, he can. He can do that. And once again, the phone number to the White House is 202-456-1111.
You know, that video that she released, I saw that, and it's so interesting. They really weren't protesting or anything. Remember, they were just something there. They were there.
Well, what was happening was they were trying to get any type of information about the war, because they had filed for a Freedom of Information right. Act and did not get anything. And the reason why is because nobody wants, the government doesn't want anybody to know what's going on.
Right.
And come to think of it, another thing that she actually leaked was the fact that the U.S. does actually know how many civilians have been killed in Iraq and Afghanistan, because the U.S. government claims that they don't know, but we do actually know. And we know this because Chelsea Manning proved that we know this. And we also know that the amount of civilians that are killed in comparison to quote-unquote combatants is a 2-to-1 ratio.
Wow.
So two innocent men, women, or children are killed for every one "quote unquote" combatant in the Middle East.
Yeah, and this guy that he didn't get elected, but he is going to have control on those drones, Angie. He's going to have control on those drones, and that's what those drones do. They will hit a target, And then you can't see them. They're so high, you can't see them. And what they do, they fly around. And then when people go to help those people, they fire again.
Right, exactly.
So they fire
again. It's a tactic used by the U.S. military and the police.
Right. And on the video that she released, they had the pilots. You could hear the pilots. And all of a sudden, you hear this voice, and there was children down there. Children got hurt. Got killed or like that. And you know what the pilot said? The pilot said, well, their father shouldn't have brought them to a rally.
Huh.
That's what he said. Shouldn't have brought them to, and it wasn't a rally. I mean,
well, it's the whole drone program. Eventually, we're going to be covering this.
Oh, yeah.
In depth. And one of the most troubling things, and if you haven't seen the documentary Drone, you should definitely check it out. One of the things that the Air Force whistleblowers have said is that the children are called fun-sized targets. And that should really be troubling to everybody.
Yeah.
It should be something that we're concerned about.
I watched that video. You told me about it, and I watched it, and it is very – it just shows exactly what they're doing. And one of the things that – I think there's two of them out there, and one of them that I watched was this. They were having a meeting, and it was all the elders of the city, of the town. This whole was all these elders, these older men, and they were having this meeting about things that were going on in the village, and they were attacked by a drone, and it killed a bunch of them, and the U.S. never took responsibility for that, and it happens all the time.
Our drone program has widely expanded under the Obama administration, and we can expect that to happen with the other one.
The other thing. Same with Obama deported more people than ever.
That's true.
You know, and it's just going to get worse.
We have about 15 minutes left.
About 15 minutes.
Wow.
We were sitting here talking. Oh, if I was a drinking man, I'd start drinking again. But I'm not a drinker, so I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to drink, so I'm not going to do that. You know, we have time. We'll take maybe one or two calls. If you want to give us a call, You can call Tammy in there at 503-231-8187, and we'll take a call, maybe two if we have time. But I want to go back, and I'm really worried about this guy taking over this government, and all the stuff that he said is just horrible. And I'm worried that the military will get expanded. He said he's going to make the military bigger.
Well, that really... Okay. Well, if we're going to make the military bigger, and he complains about... I've heard him say in interviews that we've spent over $6 trillion in Iraq and in the wars in the Middle East.
Yeah, we've spent
over $6 trillion, and he complains about that. But why would he complain about that if he's going to spend more? And for all of the money that takes to go to war, we're also going to have to put more money aside to take care of veterans when they come back. So.
Right.
And that's really why some of the things he's said about, he's hinted at privatizing the VA, and what he has said is that he is thinking about a choice program, quote unquote choice program. The trouble with that is that is going to be more expensive.
Right.
Than the VA. And I can talk a little bit more about this. And I'd also like to read a poem that I wrote before the end of the hour.
Yeah, we're going to.
But we do have a phone call.
Yeah, we have a phone call. We'll take a phone call.
We have we have Walter on the phone. Hello, Walter.
Hello. What I'm about to say may sound a little fantastic, but and we can only speculate about it, but this guy is a fascist.
Yep.
And so, can we hope, maybe, in some circumstance, for some kind of military resistance to this guy? I heard a person today say that our only real hope here is a military coup.
Ooh.
That perhaps the military will side with the people to defend the Constitution.
Mm-hmm.
And so I want you guys just, you're all, you know, I'm not saying that you're at the high, your experience was not at the highest level in the military, but could you speculate on that and
okay.
give me your opinion on that?
Thanks, I appreciate it. I asked that same question, my friend, and I said, you know, the military is not supporting this guy. And she wrote me back real fast. She says, oh, man, she says, I am so afraid of a military coup and that would be horrible if there's a military coup. And, boy, that would be terrible.
That sounds like we have another phone call.
Go. Sure. I want Tammy, she... Okay, go ahead.
You want me to do what?
No, go ahead. We'll take the call, and then you can read your point.
Oh, okay.
Hello?
Hi. Thank you very much for this conversation. I'll make it quick.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to say thank you. These things are important to know, and I would like to make a suggestion.
Sure.
That instead of increasing the fear that a lot of people are feeling, that when you talk about things that people have done that show courage and determination, you allow yourself to say not that it's merely interesting, but that it is inspiring. And the second thing I would like to say is that why not suggest what people can do to cope with our fear, which is to join organizations which have made commitments to stand against these things. And the third and final thing I would like to say is let us be smart. Let us see the things that Trump has suggested that we can get behind. For example, let's go on those Trump websites and say, yay, Donald Trump says he doesn't want to interfere in other countries. Let's encourage Donald Trump to get those military bases out, or to at least make us think about it and put pressure on him and the things he has said that he would do that would benefit everyone.
Thank you. Appreciate it. But you're talking to two people who have high PTSD, very high PTSD, and right now that PTSD has gone from 1,000 miles an hour to 15,000 miles an hour.
Well, I think that she has a really good point.
It's a great point
of joining an organization, or there's a lot of excitement in the air right now, both nervous and hopeful.
Yeah,
and right now, I think is a good time to organize with other people. And if you're a veteran and you are not a veteran and you're just an ally, then Iraq Veterans Against the War exists.
Yep.
Veterans for Peace exists. The War Resisters League exists. Military's Families Speak Out exists. There is a Civilian Soldier Alliance. There is so many different things that you can join or at least get on an email list and read, because I do a lot of reading, and just even having some kind of connection with other people who think the same way that you do can be really important.
Yeah, and right now veterans are really, really, really having trouble with their PTSD because of this, PTSD is really hard, and we're having trouble right now with it. So what she said is a good idea, but we have to work through our PTSD and then get settled down and really go after them. And Angie's got a poem.
Oh, I have a poem. Well, I did a lot of research on privatizing the VA, and I might not have time to talk about all that today. Maybe I can at the end, but I do want to read a poem that I wrote, and I don't write poetry very often. It's called Operation Lies. I was once a girl, only 19 years old, firing Tomahawk cruise missiles into Iraqi soil. I was told I would help people in the military, but at 3 in the morning, we fired away. Saddam's palace destroyed, and 3 months of bombing. For this, I am forever sorry. I only recently discovered we'd killed 7,000. It is tears of regret I cry to myself. In fits of rage, I grasp for help. On Veterans Day, F your parade. The Iraqi people deserve none of our blame. It is all lies to criminalize the wrong side of the U.S. game. A takeover, a resource war. It's not the rich kids that go. It's the nation's poor that were sent to destroy Arab lives. We all could have flourished, like the kids of Congress in Stanford and Princeton dorms. The 1% is violent as blank. They don't care who loses, but they only care that they win. But we are human. Women, children, men, sick, sore, strong, but still standing tall. We are one people. Iraqis, Afghanis, Syrians, Somalians, Pakistanis, Libyans, rural Americans, inner city kids who join for a chance to go to college. Recruiters say to your face, don't worry, you'll be fine. But then you realize your mission is Operation Lies. If you get them young, then they won't ask why. But in hindsight, 13 years have gone by, and over 1 million lives will never live, because the U.S. is out of its God mind. Drone attacks by day, secret ops at night. And if we pay attention, we see the fascist U.S. government made this disaster begin. We need peace now, one people, with strength, unity, and awareness. We will live through the night.
Oh, it's wonderful, Angie. Wonderful. Thanks. I really enjoyed that.
I wrote that for, actually, there's an art piece it's supposed to travel the United States, and it's U.S. female veterans and Middle Eastern refugee women in the United States, and they're taking their poems and they're combining them and they're sewing them on this big giant canvas.
Wow.
And that's supposed to, there's a blurb of that that's supposed to be on there. So I'm curious to see how that turns out.
That's amazing. I like that. But, you know, I was thinking about what our wonderful friend, she called us and said, and I agree with her. And my brother said, you know, these people are telling us, get over it. And do all this and do all this. And he showed me a bunch of things that the right wing did after Obama was elected. And they are horrible. They had effigies of him and they burned them. Hung mannequins painted black from trees. They called him all kinds of names. They had huge rallies and had these signs that were so vulgar. About President Obama, you know, and they say we should be nice to them after what they did to him. You know, I have a little problem with that. And then when Charlie Hales, the mayor, said that there was $1 million worth of damage in one of the rallies, you know, and I thought, we do trillions and trillions and trillions of dollars worth of damage around the world. You know, we bomb places, he's saying $1 million and we burn cities down.
I remember, you know, when I was in the Navy, I had a secret security clearance. And I don't actually really care if I'm saying this out loud or not. I've already said it a million times. And when I was bored, I would sit and read stuff on the computer, and I read about how many, there were reports about we would allow a certain X amount of millions of dollars to rebuild a certain hospital or school that we bombed in the Middle East. And then months later, when that was supposedly ready for inspection and supposed to be up and running again, so an inspector would actually go out to look at the newly built building and it would still be a pile of rubble, but all the money was gone. And so if we complain about how much money, which it's not good that people's property got damaged or anything.
Yeah, it's bad.
But if people are so concerned about a couple thousand, few thousand dollars, then what about all the millions of dollars that
billions
are lost
of dollars
with that? Trillions.
Trillion. We got 2 minutes, and we'll be back on December 16th at 9 a.m. And
don't forget our Facebook page.
And there it is.
Battle of New Orleans at the end of the early British wars. The young land started growing, the young blood started flowing, but I ain't a marching anymore. For I've killed my share of engines in a thousand different fights. I was there at the little big horn. I heard many men lying, I saw many more.
Rupert Murdoch, control your newscasts. The KBOO Evening News provides breaking news about local issues, from water fluoridation to immigration raids. We bring you daily coverage of what's going on in Portland, Cascadia, and around the world. Tune in every weekday at 5 for the KBOO Evening News on KBOO, your community radio station.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is also available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Board meetings will be conducted at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, unless otherwise noted. The KBOO Board of Directors meets the fourth Monday of the month, starting at 6 p.m. Please call 503-231-8032 to verify if a meeting is being held. To request notice of board meetings in writing, please email Monica at kboo.org.
And this is KBOO